Doors closed.
This is what's already been talked about.
Yeah. So didn't go okay,
did it? Yeah, it did, but initially they were saying, last year you were saying that you had just been ready, and I didn't really understand at the time.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I'll put that message off. So
we
can have a look at it together.
Okay. This is the Rams, isn't it?
This is the Rams thing, yeah.
Yeah, the Rams thing, I'd much prefer to do the IET.
Sorry?
I'd much prefer to write one for the IET, because that one's taking the simple system and doing a software FMEA on it alongside a hardware FMEA on it. Using the traditional methods, although the software ones are
Well, you might be able to, given that they've accepted, you might be able to write one. But didn't did you submit something to the system safety one?
Yes, that one was the using FMMD with software, which I would say is about 60% ready. But you know, a year ago I would have told you it was 90%. I'll just go and do it, yeah? Oh! Okay.
Is that... Amanda's
still over there. They must be having a debrief or something. Because they've got
she'll need to sign and... Oh,
yeah,
I have
to
make sure
that I'm at least taking a serious attempt to
I've done my homework actually this morning, so
I was going to get a cup of tea. I've just done the review. They want a formal chapter submission.
That's the review.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
The only thing we can do that for. He was not Because there wasn't, they said to approve it, and there didn't seem to be any
real I've made comments, but it's actually, it's much more readable, so that's good.
Oh, so it's probably pretty near, or is it?
Yeah. I think we're still going to do a bit of fighting the language.
I'm afraid you're going to have to live with a load of stuff.
Okay, cool.
Maybe not yet. Maybe in a week.
Okay.
I have so much copy of it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And there is a fourth time
now. Oh yes.
And they do fix that limit as well. It's a way of checking to see what needs to be done and to see whether you need any help or if there's any other the intention is to help you complete your PhD.
Yes, I've got that. Yes, so there were causes where they said, do you need anything? I wish I had done some of the research method things that earlier on.
It was, yes.
The opening of it the other day, last week.
So you just have to convince them that there's a PhD to be done. Is that what you have to do?
You have to end up there, you can do it within the specific time limit, and the left hand.
Presumably you did a transfer report some time ago, I guess.
Yes, you did it a long time ago. And in fact it
was a transfer from Enfield to PhD. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Right. So really they just want convincing about the time.
I tried to submit it and I submitted it as a tutorial and then you found out how to do it. So does that mean I'm going to be
that's why they sent it to you.
This is slightly non-standard, or certainly non-standard for the type of conferences that we're used to. Mm. The worst thing is, must be submitted in Microsoft Word format.
That's bad, isn't it?
Oh yes.
That's bad, because and that will drive you mad.
Oh yeah.
How long does it have to be?
It does say somewhere. Give us some information about that. The deadline is 1st of August, which isn't very far away. Well, it was less than 2 months away. That's not. Now, do you remember what you actually put in for this one?
Yes, this was FMEA applied to hybrid software and hardware systems.
Okay.
So it was taking the example of the 4-20 milliamp input with the two software functions on top of it and applying standard hardware FMEA to that and then applying software FMEA to it and then saying, well, what we can say about the payload modes on it. So this was using the traditional techniques, not the one I've
Okay. So then you're going to say
that part of this was going to say that this is problematic and look,
but then the second paper of the other place was the real application
Of the FMMD applied to with the integrated software and hardware model. So sort of the answer to the problem.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, as long as
peer review
of papers. That's stated in the call for papers. Clearly. Peer review of papers will be required as part of the RAMS.
That's clever.
But that seems strange, isn't
quite
it?
Quite odd.
It's actually peer review. Yeah.
Well, most of the stuff I found on applying FMEA to software have either come up from IEEE or RAM. I don't know what type they are. There might be a aircraft industry, there might be a lot of that, but they use a lot of FMEA.
Maybe it's a way of getting people to submit who are interested rather than people being on PC and just I don't know if
it's part of the electrical engineering community or I don't think it's part of the compute because it's unusual, but it might be that evolutionary strategy then, that if everybody did that and you then trashed all the other papers, you'll have an evolutionary advantage and therefore you will
John
Nash here.
Absolutely. It's a game theory strategy in there.
But maybe they don't accept your paper if you reject it.
Some hidden rules.
It's reward and punishment is usually what happens with these things, and then you react accordingly. Anyway, we need to do something about this, presumably. Can I leave it to you? Well, we've got a month, and we've got 2 months nearly to do this. I intend to be on holiday for much of August, so...
I'm away in the second half of July.
I'll be around throughout July. But won't be around too much during August.
Okay.
Deadline?
August the 3rd.
I prefer the other paper, which is using FMMD.
You don't want to write this paper, you want to write the other one, you're saying.
I'll write both, but I'd rather write the other one.
You've got to give us some basis on which to rewrite.
This is actually still important, and it's important for your thesis anyway, because you need to have that. That what forms later bits of your, earlier bits of your thesis anyway. Motivation and stuff,
Cool.
Okay. Do you think I ought to just email that person at the top and say, sorry, we had trouble submitting and...
Reply to this message to them.
Yes.
Yes,
if I take that, then I'll.
I've forwarded the message to you. And copy me in when you do that, copy us all in, so that they all.
Okay.
Okay, so we're happy that you can go away and good news anyway. So and then you've got to produce some
Oh, no, then I think that you could do some Beaver.
No.
You have to do PowerPoint.
What's this wacky world you guys live in? Won't even use Beamer.
Beamer is the latex. Beamer means that you can take raw latex stuff that you've written your paper with and put it into slides. If it is lots of technical stuff, it's very difficult to produce PowerPoint slides with maths on them. Mm. It's just hard.
Yeah.
So we don't do it.
Yeah, fair enough. I can understand that.
But it's very easy. Once you've prepared all the stuff, if you've written the paper, then to produce a Beamer slideshow is actually then very easy.
No, I don't think it's going to be a problem for you.
I think this is going to be okay for you.
And how the figures that you'll then paste into the PowerPoint. How to collect the figures in your slides.
I think you can probably. As long as you don't get too annoyed with it has default things which are just utterly annoying, and then it's unfortunately it is the de facto standard almost everywhere, so including in the university horizon. Anyway, so we're happy with that, and you can deal with that.
Give us a copy to have a look at.
Yeah,
do give it to us, don't just send it to them.
Oh yeah, no, please.
No, we need to go through a proper, don't send it off. No.
Okay, sure.
So they'll probably be mailing you soon to say, congratulations, you've got the
tutorial.
I did delete all of it. I opened it anyway. Or I've got 10 tutorials or something. Yeah,
I do remember what we did now. Yeah. Right, okay, shall we have a look at failure mode?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Who wants to start,
It read much better, and I think it met the specification that they put.
I
found the first section seemed very good, and then you got into repeating mode from around page 17, 18.
Okay. I didn't actually get that far, sorry.
A lot of it seemed to be sort of, you'd say something and then you'd say it again. I have three questions, but I'm happy to leave those. So I had one on page 14 which is talking about base components. Now it seems to me our choice of base components is a kind of arbitrary choice in some way, isn't it? Because they could be relatively simple things, or they could be quite complex things, and they could even be derived components from other analyses somewhere else as the base component. So I wondered whether one can describe a base component in terms of what you're trying to do with the analysis. I don't know what I mean here yet. In terms of what you're trying to do with this process, can you define what a base component is? Because I think it is arbitrary.
Mm.
It doesn't even relate to a part.
No. It's what you choose to start with, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Set of input components that you choose.
Well, I was thinking, what is this overall process trying to do? It's trying to form an analysis of a system, isn't it?
Mm.
To give a certain metric.
Yeah. When people draw a circuit diagram, so you've got one of these quad op amps, which is four op amps on a chip. And its natural path on the parts list. When you see it in the schematic, there'll be this sort of circuit diagram, and let's say it's integrated circuit number 5. Well, one of the op amps will be called A, and one will be called IC5B and D and whatever. So they're all integrated circuit 5, but as far as the schematics concerned, they're separate op-amps.
So what I mean is you can
even the schematic designer or the designer of the circuit is using them as base components, even though they happen to be on one chip.
Mm.
But it's very difficult to describe.
Well, I'm wondering whether a better way of describing a base component... I mean, you can give a series of examples of what base components might be,
yeah,
including parts within an integrated circuit, but can it be defined in terms of what the overall process is aiming to produce?
Yeah.
What comes out of this analysis? It's a metric, isn't it? You know, you take a circuit, you do all the decomposition. Mm. What do you get at the end of doing this?
What you get is the failure mode behaviour. So you say this circuit can fail in, say, these three ways.
Yeah.
And then each of the ways in which it can fail, you can trace back to its causes.
Yeah. So your base component is just the kind of root of that. I don't know what the root will be for the tree. Mm.
It is a sort of lowest level leaf on the tree.
Yes, it is.
I mean, the serious question then is what happens if you change your initial set of base components? How does that affect your analysis?
Okay.
In that.
I mean, I can imagine I don't know whether the tree is the right word because I think of it going downwards, but. We've got an inverted tree.
It is kind of like that, isn't it? You've got these.
I mean, what you're doing with you've got these kind of leaves, and you're just arbitrarily pruning this
right
and saying, well,
bottom.
At that point, that's a base component. At this point, this is a base component.
Yeah.
They could all be different levels. In fact, a second question is. You know, you mentioned this level business and having this level descriptor number, this integer. In your inverting op-amp thing, your resistors... I'm trying to remember now. I was just trying to work out what level you'd put these different components at. The resistors and the op-amp are level zero. The potential divider would therefore be level one because it's used two level zero to construct it. So is the inverting op-amp as a whole level 2?
Yes.
Even though it's using a level 1 and a level 0?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I wanted that number to...
So it reflects... So this is the biggest depth of the tree. That's what that number is then.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes.
Whatever
for
you call
that. Derived
what do you
component?
Call that measure? The biggest depth of a tree. You know, the furthest point from where you are to a leaf. Probably has a name.
It does.
Reachability or...
I mean, actually,
depending on application circumstances, it's called height, length...
All right, okay. Okay.
Could be height.
I mean, depth would have worked.
Depth, all right.
I mean, of the tree, so then it would indicate that much.
Okay.
Any of those, depending on...
So you've got a level 2, and that consists of a level 1, which consists of two level 0s, and there's a level 0 there as well.
Yes.
If that's what your tree is.
Yes.
So you call this 2 because that's the biggest...
Because I'll take the highest of the...
The tree, in computer science, we do actually talk about, we do start them, rooted trees, you know, start at the root is at the top, and you do go down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And then you do talk about the depth of the tree, so that,
yes,
would,
right.
That would be a good
perfect
analogy.
But then the question is, so do you need to explicitly talk about the levels for components, or would you just say it's the depth of the tree? It's the distance to the leaf or something.
What I wanted to do was to keep track of the number of times it had been abstracted, really. But that was purely because I was thinking in practical terms.
This is running an algorithm.
You wouldn't want to
use this information somewhere else. You need quick access to it. You don't want compute. Okay,
yeah.
I'd like to have that written somewhere. Then I mean, the reason for taking this level as an attribute rather than computing it is for these computational reasons. Right?
I think when you mention the level number, you talk about an algorithm, or whether that was a conversation or whether that was in this document.
I think it definitely was in there at one point.
The two large cappuccinos this morning didn't help then.
I can't remember now. Anyway, coming back to the base component business. So what we're saying is that we have made an arbitrary choice of level zero. And actually, that level zero could, in some other analysis, So the question is, how do you say that that is level zero? And I am just wondering whether you phrase it in terms of what this overall structure is attempting to do, rather than talk. I mean, you're going to have to talk about manufacturers' parts. You're going to have to talk about ICs that have got you know, bits in them, and all those kinds of things. But in terms of describing an abstract structure, I don't know whether that's a way of thinking about it. You're looking vague, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm feeling vague.
You're feeling vague.
I agree that this needs to be. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I think it does need to be thought through, because you do seem to want to talk about this level in the algorithm that you're using. Therefore, you do need to define it appropriately.
But it's also the fact these are base components. I mean, I think the definitions that you've got are reasonable, but I just wondered whether it could be tighter. Because I know mathematicians like things tightly defined, rather than engineers a bit relaxed about it from time to time. So, right, so I've got the level thing sorted out, that's okay. The base component, still not quite sure of, and I think my only other thing was a question about, you know, you talk about environmental states or operational states. Yeah, environmental states and operational states. I'm not quite sure of my wording here. I wasn't quite sure. If we just take the operational state business, for example, so you have a circuit that could operate in a normal mode, this is on page 819, by the way, or, say, a test mode. Does that mean that that structure has two directed graphs? Or is it...
No, because when you apply the operational state, you may reveal different failure modes.
But if you imagine you have a structure that is enabled, that you can trace down. So you've got a symptom up here, and you trace down to find where that symptom emerged from. The operational state thingy will only be revealed in one mode or another, won't it?
Let's say some sort of amplifier, and we've got, or let's say it's an ADC input, and we're not sure if it's working correctly. And so we apply an operational state where we deliberately pull it down and then read it again. And if we don't get the result we expect, that's a different failure mode. It's another way that it failed.
But how do you put these sorts of things into this structure? I think that's my question. You know, you've got it in your UML there.
Yeah.
You've got environment. You've got operational state.
Yeah.
So they're in there.
Yeah.
But I don't know... I guess I think I wanted to see an example as to what this would do to the tree that's created.
I don't think it does anything to the tree. What it can do is it can reveal other failure modes. So if we had an unobservable failure mode, by adding a test condition into it, we can now have the unobservable failure mode, and we can also have the test failing in a particular way. So we're adding failure modes.
So it expands your other DAG.
So the non-test mode is a subset. Is it?
No, it would just be that the because we've got this test mode, we have to consider it in the analysis of the functional group. And we would have for each failure scenario that we consider, we would have to consider it for both operational states. And that's why the UML diagram applies the operational states to the functional group, so that if for our functional group we actually have an operational state, say a test, then for every failure scenario we look at, we look at it in normal mode and we look at it in the test mode as well. And what,
but
this
what
will
does that,
mean,
what does that do in terms, I mean, if we take that example,
yes,
let's imagine that our potential divider had a test mode.
Yes.
How would that change this structure?
What it would do is this derived component, instead of having the failure modes high and low, it could have a failed
some
test
other
or something.
Yeah.
So it hasn't changed this at all, it's just changed the...
Well, everything that ripples up there would be changed. Yes, because that there are now more failure modes to deal with.
Oh, so it might change the actual component.
Yeah.
So therefore, if you operational states are adding more symptoms into these derived components, then, aren't they?
Yes, they are. But
what does that mean?
Well, one of the simplest ones. We use this at work. We have a this test line, and there's a switch.
Yeah, you don't have to illustrate.
We're
talking about an abstract concept here.
Yes.
You have for any, it seems, for every derived component, there's actually several possible groups of symptoms.
Yes.
Depending on the operational state.
Yes.
So, are they different derived components? Because this structure doesn't have a kind of switch in it, an operational state switch.
No,
your UML
no.
diagram does.
Yes.
But this doesn't.
That's because the process of analysis here has to consider the operational states, if any exist.
Okay.
And
so do you consider all operational states when you do?
No, only,
when you
only
go
the
from
ones
functional
that
grouping to
derived
components.
Different one of these trees for
no,
every
No, I don't
state.
Think it is a different tree. It's not because for because it ties to the functional group.
The big ones at the end.
There's one right
at
the very end.
Yeah.
Is that one?
Yeah. Yeah. So what's happening is the functional group, if we say it's a safe digital input or something, has operational states associated with it.
Yeah.
So it could be in test mode or normal mode.
Yeah.
So all that's going to happen is when you analyse this functional group, you're going to come up with a derived component which may have another symptom in it or
an extended set
of symptoms. Yes, but it's purely the analysis of this functional group having to consider the operational states.
Okay.
And then the environmental conditions.
So, for any derived component, you have to consider all operational states to complete.
That apply to that functional group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you create.
More. So, you're not, they're not global. They're not. So, the operational state isn't applied to everything in there.
So, how, in the graph produced, do you tag or keep account of a particular operational state? So if I wanted to look at this overall directed graph in, let's say, the test state, what would that do?
Well, I don't think you look at it in that way. If you got this failure symptom, failed test, that's just another failure symptom that you have to deal with up here.
I understand what you said before about, you know, a derived component, we have to include all operational states to create a complete list, but it's just that, like, it's kind of like you end up with a big graph, and it's like, well, in this mode I'll look at it with my sort of red pair of glasses on and I'll see this part. then if it's in this mode, I'll look with my green glasses on. And I'm just wondering, how do you encapsulate that idea into this complete description? Do you understand what I mean?
I do.
Because it's in your UML.
Yes. Yes.
So I understand that a little bit, but I'm hazy at the moment about what that does to this overall structure.
Well, I don't think it changes. It doesn't change the structure. I didn't think of anyone looking at the entire model and then applying an operational state to it, like a filter. Because if this was a safe digital input that, or whatever, you would assume that it was being operated all the time. So this would just come up as another failure mode. So it's not something that you would switch on and off.
So would you ever consider different operational states? Is it always a fixed set of operational states?
This particular circuit would be designed so that we would know that switch is in this case, that we would have a positive voltage here if the switch was just simply turned on, and in the test mode it would deliberately pull it low, so we would expect it always to be low in the test mode. So what it's done is this particular design has an operational state which is a self-test mode in it. So this is one functional group which has has this self-testing mode.
Okay, I'd like to abstract from the concrete example to the high level so we can understand the principles. At the detail level we just get bogged down and forget the point in a way.
This has got two sets in it, hasn't it? It's got a sort of normal set of symptoms and it's got a test set or...
Well, there's
one set of symptoms for that, but it consists of two, subsets. Or are you saying that one is always subsumed in the other?
And my question was whether you always just have, you consider everything always. So you can't look at these restricted cases of having certain operations only.
Yeah.
Yes, it is always, it is dealt with at this level.
Therefore you could create a big graph that includes everything, I suppose. But then comes the question, is there any sense for perhaps efficiency that you would wish to filter a graph to produce a subgraph? Would that be of any value, or do you just not need to consider it at all?
I don't think so, because the way I was thinking of an operational state or some sort of self-testing, self-diagnostic mode, is that it is part of the functional group. It's part of the design of the functional group to have this operational state inside it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually increase the number of symptoms that you might get.
So can that change? I mean, can you want to view then one functional group and different operational states? Is it always fixed?
You would view it when you analyse the functional group. You would look at every failure scenario
and every operational state.
Yes. And normally there's only one operational state, if there is one at all, and that's usually self-test. I was making it more general by saying it's an operational state rather than self-test mode.
I don't understand really the point then of having operational states. I mean, why are we talking about them in a way? If they're always a fixed set that we consider, I mean, there might be some reason for doing it, but I'm just not understanding.
No. I mean, because all you seem to be saying is that we have to consider all of, when we're creating a derived component, we have to consider all operational states of the functional group.
Mm.
We therefore produce one complete set of symptoms, which includes some that occur in this operational state, some in that.
Yep.
And you build your graph.
Yes. Yes.
Is there any kind of mutual exclusion of symptoms or anything like that, such that if you put the system in one state, there's a whole set of symptoms that can never appear.
Simplifying the heart or something.
Yeah.
I've never thought of it in that way.
No.
I've just thought of it as the self-testing mode of revealing unobservable errors, really.
But there you're talking, so I think there you're talking about allowing two different views, right? Not always having one where you consider everything, because you're considering one without this test and one with this test as well, which to me is two different states with two different analyses. Right? At which point then we have a reason for having a notion of operational state and that changes. And then the question is about, well, how does it transform these graphs? Is very pertinent. You kind of actually say, well, under different views, it does this, it transforms in this way, or it just shrinks. So in some way, actually, if you looked from one view when everything's in a certain particular states, then maybe your analysis is kind of small rather than thousands of nodes. So it might actually have a fairness.
And also, thinking about it in extremis, you know, the only reason to put something in to reveal these unobservable states, you put it into a special mode, which means it can't perform its normal function.
No, it can't.
I mean, if you take, you know, boundary scan or something like that, it's a ridiculous example. You completely change the architecture of the underlying structure in order to reveal something that you wouldn't show in a normal state. So I think this has to be handled at the abstract level, this concept. And I don't know what it is yet.
Perhaps if I described it as this would typically be a self-test mode, which might reveal, which should reveal unobservable errors.
I mean, I wondered. Perhaps not for now. I mean, maybe we just have to get on with chapter 5 or something. But to me, an example might be revealing.
Well, that's what I wanted in chapter 5. I wanted to put an example with an operational state in it, a self-test mode.
Yeah.
And also, I wanted to pick a component with which typically has an environmental problem. Some components are very sensitive to about 60 centigrade, which a circuit board can easily get to. And I wanted to put two more examples in Chapter 5, one with an operational state self-test mode and one with a... and I think I've got to do that.
What would also be kind of maybe good if you had one, this picture, the DAG from the failure modes and everything side by side so we can see them next to each other, and then underneath the changes, when you change these operational states, you say this is different, and we can then compare, we can both see this together with it.
What would happen is that there would be symptoms here that would be fuzzy, but we'd say, you would say have an amplifier which has gone wrong, and it's giving you the wrong output, but you don't know. You don't know it's giving you the wrong output, but you would turn the test mode on and you'd actually see that it was actually faulty.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, what I would then like to know is what effect this has on your methodology and on these two graphs, basically.
Yeah. So I don't think it has any effect on it at all, because when you've analysed this functional group, all you would have is an X, because you know that it's a circuit which has a self-check mode, you would know that it has another symptom, which is failed tests. Say.
So if I'm displaying this and your graph, will it change anything? If you're displaying your failure mode graph here?
No, it won't, because that functional group is designed to have the self-test mode in it, so it might have one more symptom. Rather than having the...
if you're having more symptoms, you change the other graph. These DAG things. I'm confused.
Well...
But say the
functional group has this self-test mode, which that doesn't.
So you're saying it changes the particulars, but this process is still the same
process.
Absolutely,
exactly the same.
But the symptoms change.
Yeah. So if you've come back to a slightly practical example, say we've got this amplifier that fails, and we don't know it's failed. It's just giving us an incorrect voltage or reading or whatever, and that's very dangerous. So this would be recognised, and it would have this self-test mode.
So the first symptom we get, we can't actually observe it. It looks like a normal in-range voltage. And then when we apply the self-test, we actually see a symptom of failure.
Mm.
So that's why I wanted to keep, that's why I tied it in the UML diagram to the functional group.
Okay, I mean, I was saying what would be nice if you have this together with this, a side-by-side, so you can see kind of what's going on in the process, both in this level and this level.
Yes.
And then if we observe what happens to both of these diagrams as you change your operational state, as you add in these self-test modes, then, I mean, from what I understood a minute ago, you'd be having more symptoms, so you'd be...
Yes, you would, yes.
So you would be...
If you've got something with a self-check mode, but it would be totally unacceptable to have this amplifier that can fail and give you incorrect readings. It might, it probably would be totally unacceptable.
To whom?
To, if someone was looking at, say you were approving it for some safety critical application, and they say, well, if this resistor fails, we'll just have the wrong voltage, and we won't know what's going on with this process. We'll actually be reading the wrong value for it. So that just would not be acceptable for a safety critical product. So they would demand a self-test mode in it, and it would be part of the functional group.
Can you think of, I'm not happy about this at the moment, can you think of an operation, or rename it as topology change? Because you're really putting a circuit, you're creating a different function if you switch its operational state. You're really changing the topology of the system. I mean, one possibility we have here is to just forget operational states. I'm just wondering about the impact of this idea on a PhD. You know, there's a good PhD here without even considering these extras, I think. But I think now we have it. I mean, let's take an extreme example of boundary scan. Now, you know, you guys don't know about boundary scan, but basically you have some kind of microprocessor system or something, and it does a normal function. You stick it in this test mode, and internally it completely changes its architecture. So you can put a whole load of stuff in and test a whole load of stuff. So it's a completely different function for the same group of circuits, because it's just been completely rewired. Now, what's the implication in terms of this analysis of something that looks like this object, but then it becomes a completely different object? Because that's an extreme example of an operational state. And I wonder whether we want to go there.
It might be better to just hide this.
Well, you're not hiding it. You're creating a valid. You're creating a valid body of work here. And you know, as we both know, you can get useful stuff out of this without thinking about test modes and things.
If that's an extra thing, one thing you can do is to discuss that at the end in this further work.
Because I think the implications might be profound.
It's better to get the basic thing done right first and worry about.
Until we're really sure what it means.
But actually some exploration, a little exploration with an example to understand the abstraction of the idea that you have is kind of useful. And just these pictures of...
I did think an awful lot about operational states and self-test modes. I have really thought about it, and it's the only place that it goes in the UML model, but I'm quite happy to put it in further work at the end.
Yeah, I'm worried about diverting Robin
from
the important stuff. Because I'm also not sure about environmental conditions yet either. I don't understand the implications of that.
And inhibit as well. In
so all these things at the end here.
They may not, might be able to get rid of them all or put them all in future work, because they're very important practical considerations in these things.
But are they not just things that produce misconduct? failures.
Yes, they are.
I mean, you know, you take a circuit and you heat it up, it'll fail.
It'll fail,
And it's up to the designer to design the normal functions to lay within the environmental constraints.
Yes.
So I wonder whether that's a bit of a diversion at the moment.
I think
getting it right
under normal circumstances first, and then worrying about that later.
Inhibit is even easier to throw away because I don't really like it. It comes from.
That's a good reason.
It comes from poultry.
Another operational state thing, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Inhibit is something that was bolted onto poultry analysis after they lost some rocket in the 1960s due to some temperature problem.
Right.
I'm not sure. It might have been the space shuttle with the O-rings, actually.
Yes.
And what they found out was that if it was too cold, this rubber ring just just couldn't keep a seal, and that's the
answer.
And so they added to poultry analysis this inhibit gate. So they'd say, well, this seal will only fail in this particular way if the temperature's below such and such.
Yeah.
And they added some more gonk to this awful thing with poultry analysis.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's it's probably a nice way to draw something on a board, and everyone knows what you're talking about.
Should we forget these things, though?
Yeah.
I think at least for the moment. For this chapter, you're talking just about the basic.
Yeah.
The basic ways that things can fail.
Okay. Yeah, I can move them out to.
Yeah, we'll move them to the moon for the moment.
Just as
you could inhibit them for the moment.
Just as a slight aside, your notion of symptoms, does that depend on your level of accuracy of measurement of something? If I could test if something was smoking, or if it varied in temperature by values of 1 degrees or something? I'm being slightly silly, but does it depend on some viewpoint of what's happening in terms of what can fail, what you can measure?
A failure mode implicitly says you have some system that can detect failure mode. However that's done, I think from an abstract point of view, you don't have to talk about that kind of detail. You do have a detecting system, which may fail, of course.
But I was trying to think of the impact on this in the same sort of way as change of operational state, whether that, because that could then change, could that change your symptoms and hence see these graphs?
Well, you could have a different measuring system
that would then give you different sort of failure moments, perhaps. Depends on, your level of ability to distinguish.
When the 420 milliamp one input is quite is quite useful for that example, because there it says we've got this current going over a resistor and we would expect the voltage levels to be within this range. So there we do have measurement, but we would probably put some accuracy range on it, 1 or 2% or something like that. But if the signal isn't between 4 and 20 milliamps, we say that it's in a failure state.
This doesn't really matter. It's just if one is discussing these things, then it's a point that one might discuss at some point.
In a sense, these descriptions are sort of loose terms. We are using kind of mental processes, aren't we? We're not using a formal analysis to construct these. We're using a rather informal expertise.
Yes.
So there's an inevitable fuzziness about these descriptions.
Yes. But the traditional way to do this is even more fuzzy, because they're taking one component, looking at, oh, this fails in this way, in this way. And then they're looking at the whole circuit, everything, and saying, well, how will the system fail when this failing mode goes over? So what happens there is far more fuzzy than what we're going to have. And also, for each of these stages of analysis, we've got some sort of report or analysis
I think the other thing to remember is we're not using this as a fault-finding technique, so we're not actually applying measurements to a functional system and using this to find the fault.
No. This is some this FMEA. There would be say the chap at GasTech in Holland who gives the European approvals for the burner controllers. He would look at an FMEA, and he's just saying, well, I don't want, you know, there's some catastrophic things that could happen, like, you know, explosions or but other awful things, and he's looking for you know, single component failure modes that can cause these catastrophic events. So by percolating this through a few reasoning stages, come up to these events that could be catastrophic.
Gives more whereas kind of transparency to the system.
Whereas what you would have is you'd have resistors 59, failure mode open, potential hazard explosion. It's very vague.
There's a lot of individual expertise or something that's been able to go over the
Good. So they start doing daft things like having the fuel valves triply protected with lots of relay systems and things like that, which probably is starting to get a bit, you know, too safe is unsafe kind of thing, because people can bodge them and, you know, oh, it won't work, I'll just put a wire around it, and the mains on it, won't open that fuel risk. So people can do that, not many people do it, it can happen. You know, it won't work, I don't know why, I'll just, you know. doesn't really happen here, because they're very regulated.
Conscious of the time, we need to decide what the next goals are going to be, don't we? According to the meeting we had in January, there was chapter 4 was an FMMD description.
Yeah.
Chapter 5 was your examples.
Yes.
Is that the one we're going to have a crack at next?
Yeah, that is big though. It's
I know.
It's about 50 pages, I think. But it's one example after another.
Yeah.
Of mainly electrical circuits that have been analysed.
I mean, I'll just take you through the chapters that we thought of, and you can say what you think. So we had chapter 1 was an intro. Chapter 2 was FMEA and the variants. Chapter 3 was problems with FMEA.
Yep.
Chapter 4 we've kind of almost done. 5 was examples. 6 was metrics, critique, evaluation. Then we got conclusion, then we got further work.
Yep. That sounds.
So is chapter 5...
Chapter 5
is that the one we should look at next?
The only thing I have to say is that this, if you're going to do this, this is part of chapter 3, presumably.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yes, it is. That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't think the examples chapter's going... Oh, I hope it's not going to change too much, but half
it's
of it I've
there.
Already shown to you.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And if you presumably you've removed the example you've used in chapter 4 from that chapter. So are you suggesting maybe 3 is better?
I'm suggesting that this has to be done.
Yep.
And therefore it may as well fit in with the...
Okay.
What do you think? I mean, that you're...
It works as an example of what one of the things that's wrong with FMEA,
which
is that you can't integrate it easily with software.
The software, yeah. I mean, that's only one of the examples. That's a bit of that chapter. Isn't it's not because I think you had some good for chapter 3. I think you had some good stuff already. Anyway, didn't you? So
I can't remember. We haven't seen a draft.
No, there isn't a draft of it. But it was when we were talking about. That paper that you did at the
system. That had there was something before that was much longer.
Yeah.
That's in the old one.
Yeah.
Which is quite large, but I think
I'll remember
get my machete out and chop that down.
Is it worth?
What you're saying is you've got chapter 5 anyway, is what you're saying, or at least a version of it.
Yes.
Yes, I have, definitely, yes.
Is there a readable version already?
It's readable, yes, definitely.
Do you want to have a go? What you might want to do is to have a go at it, just have a read through it, just check and then...
Yeah.
About anything that's repetition.
It's
very practical. It's just purely examples of these circuits. There's a paragraph describing what the circuit does and how it works, and then it goes into two of them have got.
Do you want to give us a couple of those examples so that you can make comments on those examples, and then you might, those comments may then inform what you do with the other examples. Presumably they get more complicated as they go on.
They illustrate different aspects, don't they? It starts off with an inverting op-amp, which is very similar to
subtly different though.
Yes, there is a nasty subtle difference in it.
Then
it goes, using those as building blocks, it goes through some filtering circuits.
Yeah.
And then that shows increased
hierarchy depth.
It does. And then there's a sigma delta analog to digital converter, which is mixing digital electronics and analog electronics. And then there's a temperature sensor. There's another one. There's the oscillator, which has got a circular signal path.
It's all within.
And when
control.
Oscillators go wrong, they basically just don't oscillate, and it's very difficult to find out why.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, and then but there's one more, which is the which I wrote a long time ago. Partly because I wrote it up for work as well. And it's a PT100 temperature sensor. And because this is quite a simple circuit, it's actually three resistors, but one of the resistors is very temperature sensitive. Because it was such a simple circuit in terms of the number of components, I've used that as an example for double simultaneous failure.
Okay, so this is another aspect.
Yeah.
That isn't, you got me slightly worried that was bringing the environmental stuff back in.
No, it's not. not at all. And for that one, I actually, as well, used it as an excuse to take the failure mode statistics for these components. So I took published statistics and then drew a statistical tree of which components were most likely to fail from the analysis. So you could point at the obvious one, which is the thermistor, and say, oh, well, that one's not very reliable.
What's the best way? I mean, if it's a really long chapter, do you want to give us it in bits so that we can look at
One
possibility here, John, is because each of these examples is meant to illustrate a particular conceptual point, I wonder if you may already have done it, to have a one page where you highlight what you're going to do and discuss why you are presenting these examples, because then we can check those that they are conceptually sound before having to wade through all the pain of the actual example.
Or the joy.
Or the joy.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'll do that.
Do you have these sort of diagrams in this example chapter?
Yes, I do. In one of them, I do, because I wanted to. I wanted to sort of say, well, you can actually trace which components have failed in which way to produce these top level filters.
Okay.
But only one of them, I think.
Just as I don't know if ever else agrees, as a stylistic point of view with these things, I quite like, for example, if I saw this and this side by side in subcircuits, so I can look at the example rather than the random bits, just go,
because
you can do some figures, stick them next to each other, and then you can go, this example is the analysis for this mesh.
I think the other thing is that there is, to me, there's no point in repeating the process over and over again.
No.
If you've shown through this example the process, you really can just concentrate on the conceptual differences.
I would think that's a good idea. I wouldn't go. Mm. There's no need to go through the whole process each time.
So, for example, the filter one, where you end up with four or five depths instead of three, you don't need to analyse that. You can just present the circuit and the final diagraph.
Yeah.
and say, look,
absolutely.
You know, although you have to work through the pain, you don't have to present it to us, so we have to go through the pain.
No,
absolutely.
And that will shorten the chapter
considerably.
Yeah,
yeah. And it will, and it won't. All the information is still implicitly there.
Yeah.
Just you've done some work in creating this page rather than.
So this has demonstrated the process.
That's it.
CH5 could you could get rid of
junk
of working well.
Yeah, you've done a worked example.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you—it's the conceptual differences that you must bring out.
And then you need, in order for that example chapter to be useful, you do need some discussion, presumably, about each example, which is, I think, what you were saying.
So the only thing you need to talk about then is what's different. That would be cool.
Yes. Because at the moment there are these sort of tables littered all over chapter 5.
Yeah, not good.
And people don't really want to read them.
And you can't find them if they're randomly. They move about.
No. Yeah, they still.
Quite hard even this.
I agree with what. It's still. You still have tables and figures settled. Well. At least two pages away from where you're talking about them in here.
I mean, let's put them all together even. I mean, if you have tables as well, make sure they're next to the figure, even include them in a mini page and fit table figures, everything.
You've got plenty of ways of doing that. I think that's a good idea.
No, this definitely. It helps a lot in terms of.
I think so.
Well, I know these are
things together.
And I do just have one very, very quick question to do with the UML diagram. Why is each component associated with exactly one functional group? I don't believe that.
Not necessarily true, is it?
I think it's not true.
No, it certainly isn't true.
Okay, and so my question was, what are these associated?
You need to
think very carefully about these things.
You do need to, and I would name the associations as well, and I would put I think there's a one goes there as well, because I think they really, functional groups and derived components really are a one.
And they are, definitely.
This association different from this one? Is this a different association? So without names, I don't know anything.
So that
would be collection.
Yeah, that's collection, and this is
something else.
This is analysis or something.
Yeah, and that's right. Well, give them appropriate names. And you do have to be very wary, because. I mean, these have to be different things, but they're presumably related as well, so you do have to...
Maybe some constraints.
There may be constraints. Want to just informally say what the constraints are. Whatever this one is. This is just failure mode, isn't it? In UML, if it's going in a particular direction and you haven't named it, then the association is just the name of the class that it's going to. Which is a useful.
Oh, that's quite nice. So component has failure mode. That one's all right.
But this says the component has zero or failure modes.
Yeah, components have zero. Well, has any number of failure modes, which may be true. Or you might want.
In the statement say it has one or more?
Or more, probably. And failure mode has exactly one component as well. That
I asked about last time, I think.
Yes, that's because each component has particular failure modes.
We did talk about that. Yeah.
But I don't know. You might have discussed it. But again, if you're building these things, you want to discuss these choices. Because is it just a random UML model, or have you thought about the implications of sharing failure modes or not? Why do you choose these things? So each of these decisions about the numbers and which arrows and which associations you have are kind of important. I mean, you're building a kind of small model. Why did you design it this way?
Want to get rid of functional groups was because...
Do you like them?
No, because
if you want to, you're
functional.
The operational states are tied to them, so now I can get rid of them.
Huh? You can get rid of them.
I can get rid of them now because the operational states were tied to them.
Ah, okay.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
Yep.
I think, you see,
I still like the idea of having a collection and then analysing it, but perhaps it doesn't need to be in the UML
model. But we agreed last time that was process rather than
structure. It is process, yes. It is. Yeah.
Because I think these diagrams look much better. I think these diagrams are much simpler. I think this is just...
Mm.
You know, I think it's just that.
Mm.
And I think you should. I mean, there are lots of stylistic things that you can worry about, because I think whenever you're dealing with components, I think you should be consistent with it. So put it in
under the box.
You also need to be consistent about labelling as well.
Yeah.
I noticed you were changing the names of objects.
Just stylistic things. You have lots and lots of one sentence paragraph, which and I think that may be your LaTeX thing, because you've probably got comments between them and things like that. So that may be just a LaTeX thing, but it does get a little bit annoying. Mm-hmm. And I think you're using LaTeX has a stylistic thing where it thinks that if you put things in dollar signs, it thinks that it's a mathematical statement and that you're trying to multiply together lots of these things and that kind of thing, and it never looks right.
Okay.
If you're just treating this as a word, then I just use italics.
Okay.
Okay. Or emphasis, whichever.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, also a lot of times we have little quotes around lots of words.
Yeah, yeah. They're not needed. Yeah.
I think actually, as a grammarian move, though, if you want to informally introduce a term, then maybe emphasise it the first time it's used when you describe what it is, and then don't emphasise it again.
Or either emphasise it or put it in bold. Have some kind of distinguishing thing that when you first introduce it, you know what it is. Either emphasis or bold, and then once you use it from then on, it's just text.
Okay.
What I did here, actually, I was not going through and changing the grammar much. What I was underlining the kind of key words.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, so you can look through and see how many words you use, and then think, well, will someone reading it understand it?
Yeah.
And how many of these?
Yeah,
you've got to think, what do these mean? Will they be understood by the reader?
Okay.
So I just started doing that thing, just look at and see how many times derived components, functional grouping, symptom, fault scenario number, single failure modes. There's a lot of terms.
Yes.
Will the reader understand? You need more general questions. Mm-hmm. So you can think about it. The number of times we use important words that should have some context. Just for you to have a think about it. See if you can simplify in some way.
I've made comments at all sorts of different levels, but I haven't made very many, because I didn't actually get much of a chance to look at it. Including some grammatical things, but I'm still not answering
about the terms.
Yeah,
I got maybe some questions.
But I think what you can do, I think we've still got another version of this chapter to come.
Okay.
And I think when we got that one, we can really make sure that I think it may still require...
I mean, for the moment, you probably just need to strip out that business about
the... Well, strip out
the
business and then just... Mm. I mean, you can have our comments and go through it, because...
Thank you. We did the repetition near the end. In some ways... The stuff at the end read better, though, perhaps. It might have been a nicer description than the stuff earlier. I know it's the same thing, that we were doing the same stuff again. You might want to look at which version was the best.
So
you might want to think about that, but you do repeat stuff.
Okay.
But it could be that the second half you've actually written it again
in a
better way.
Yeah.
So then you strip out or move.
Yeah.
In other words, don't always strip out the first one.
Strip out the second.
Thank you.
Keep the best version.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good strategy.
So what is the task that Robin has?
Right.
I want to write it in.
No, I think we want another version of chapter 4.
Yeah.
But then I think we can now start moving ahead of that as well. I suppose there were probably three tasks. I'm not sure when you produce this, but it has to be in the fairly near future. You want to produce your draft version of this.
Yeah, we can read it.
And you have to submit both the paper and the PowerPoint, it sounds like.
That's right. So, by the 1st of August.
Right.
That seems very strange. Particularly if you don't know that you're going to be, in.
Checking that you're actually going to give a presentation.
So that's pretty important. I mean, the other things we talked about was chapter 3, a kind of a sort of one pager description of the concepts
in chapter 5.
And there was that was for chapter 5, and there was a stripped down version of chapter 5 where you don't repeat the process all the time.
Yeah.
So we don't want to kind of give Robin all those things to do. It's too much.
No, that's too much.
So what's the best thing to do out of those?
Well, I think we do probably need the next version of chapter 4, because I think, as we agreed, that is central, and I think there is I'm still not absolutely sure we're there detail wise. So I think we do need one more go at that. Whenever you can get this, we need this. This is important now, because there is a deadline on this. And you do need to talk. You definitely need to talk to the conference organisers.
So, conference draft.
I would just do a draft of the paper, not the slides. Slides can wait.
So all three. So conference draft.
That was about 16.
And then we've got CH3 is related to RAMS.
But maybe you don't need to worry about writing that.
I think just the draft. Chapter 3, which would be part of it. I think. But we can incorporate that into chapter 3 at some stage.
Yeah.
And then do we want to worry about chapter 5 a bit yet, or do you think it's time that we did?
Well, I mean, if you could just, this is a possibility, just whip through chapter 5 and strip out all the process, and we could perhaps just take a quick look to see what it looks like. And without kind of reading the detail, we could scan through it to see, you know, whether the general shape is all right.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
By process,
you mean all the tables where it's saying, here's all the failure modes, here's all the symptoms.
Because you've described the process already,
you don't need to repeat.
You can strip all that stuff out.
What you want is the structure of each of them.
Yeah. What makes them different? What are the highlights?
There is one or two pages redescribing the FMD process.
Yeah.
And I thought that if someone looked at it,
you want it to be self-contained.
But if someone looked at it and wanted to implement it practically, they'd go straight for the examples, and they thought.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. If someone did.
You've
got them, but we don't want them in the PhD,
I don't think. No, we don't.
No, absolutely not.
Because it's just, creating.
So this is strip out the process description.
Yeah.
But the actual tables where the reasoning is going on for each example.
Not really. No, I mean, let's take the inverting amplifier example.
Yeah.
You have demonstrated with the non-inverting the process you would go through.
Yes.
So it seems to me with the inverting you can present the circuit.
Yes.
And the final diagraph.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing else in between. But then concentrate on why are you doing the inverting having just done the non-inverting. In other words, what's fundamentally
what's
different from a conceptual point of view, not electronics, concepts.
Yeah, okay, so circuit diagraph.
That's it.
And all the tables are commented out of the actual working.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what it looks like. That would be really helpful.
You know, you've got all that stuff in the background. We can easily pull it back in.
It's just been commented out.
And we'll see what that looks like.
Oh, yes, because the one with the double simultaneous failures, that would have to come back in to show that. But that doesn't matter.
So we have another version of chapter 4.
Yeah.
Conference draft, paper only. Stripped down chapter 5.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Right. Okay.
That'll be by next Friday.
I mean, what you could do then is choose one of them that you can do relatively quickly and send it to us to give us a longer period to read it while you work on the other.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
So, I mean, you've got three jobs
I mean, do you think the conference draft is the highest priority to get a first draft to us? Which of these is the
It'll
highest priority?
It'll probably take longer, though, is the trouble. Will that take longer, do you think, then?
We've still got to do it.
Yeah. But it's just if you could send us something, we have more time to look at it while he's working on it.
Ah, okay. Yeah. You mean if there's something quick and dirty, like...
Yeah, if the examples took a day or something, then...
Yeah, I mean, stripping down chapter 5, that's probably not a big job, is it?
Drawing the diagrams might take a little while because they're actually drawn.
Well, in terms of effort, which of those three
is there anything that you can do really quickly?
Yeah, I mean, is that easy to do very quickly?
I think that one? One's the quickest one.
Right, so that's number one then.
Okay.
Right.
Then you can be working on another one while we have time to look at it.
Yeah.
Looking quickly is often hard, but.
Okay.
Oh, brilliant. Cool. Okay.
Alright.
Well. That's quite nice, getting rid of all the inhibits and things like that. Oh. I was imagining if you had some, you know, safety engineer would come along, who'd been using FTA and FMEA all his life, he'd say, well, how do I model an inhibit condition?
And there'll be a whole bunch of engineers that come along and say, well, what about this? But this is a PhD,
Okay.
I'll
solve
the world problem.
You're modularizing
this as well. This is you can add the rest of it on later.
Yeah.
That looks good. I am busy on some of the following Fridays, but we can play that by ear later on.
Yeah, oh, brilliant. Right, I'll do that. I'll do the chapter 4 first, especially if it's in my mind now. I'll go back home and I'll go through each one of yours.
No, I think that's good.
Okay,
and,
cool.
Brilliant.
And then you can buy yourself some drizzling things.
If you approve chapter 4, I will. I want some PhD.
Well, we already approve it. Getting better and better.
We're now.
Silver medal for that.
That's it.
All right.
Oh, John, can we?
Yeah, I'll do this.